you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Howdy, howdy, you outlier. Did you enjoy last week's episode with Trung Tran, a former DARPA specialist investigating the intersection between human performance, recovery, and artificial intelligence? But today we're shifting gears. I know it's not the best solution, but I often find myself diving straight into work without enough strategic planning or seeing the big picture. Yep. Powering forward isn't always the best option, yet I still do it. And after a lot of contemplation, I've discovered that it usually comes back to my old patterns. Sometimes the best path forward is the easy path. And our guest this week explains how you can hit the reboot button to reprogram your subconscious and heal at the root level. Chris Marhefka is the CEO and facilitator at Training Camp for the Soul. He came into this healing work after over a decade in entrepreneurship and coaching. Having done countless programs and reading hundreds of personal development books, Chris kept running into the same challenges showing up in his life. It wasn't until he found Training Camp for the Soul and did the program for himself that he was able to truly transform his life by going deeper. The healing work Chris focuses on is a combination of breath, somatics, energy work, story work, inner child work, mindset, IFS, and other modalities to get to the deepest level of the subconscious and heal at your core. You can find him on socials at Chris Marhefka, Marhefka. And at trainingcampforthesoul.com. If you like this kind of thing, you can join his 90-day transformation at trainingcampforthesoul.com/90-day, 90-day. And the show notes for everything we discuss will be at mindbodypeak.com/41. We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. For over a decade, I've scoured the globe for the latest and greatest health and performance enhancing gear, tools, and resources that really move the needle. I've aggregated my findings, handpicked my favorites, and listed them in the continuously updated Outlier Peak Performance shop. Whether you're looking for nutritional support, sleep optimization, tools to transform your body, stress relief, cognitive enhancers, or the latest software, apps, and technology, you'll find it all behind these virtual doors. I've partnered with these companies to get you exclusive discounts so that you can fully optimize every facet of your biology, upgrade your quality of life, and spend more time doing the things you love without breaking the bank. To get there, visit outlier.com. That's outlier.com/store. And I hope you enjoy these tools and products as much as I do. Now back to the episode. If you've amassed a huge library of personal development tips, tricks, modalities, and wisdom, but don't know how to actually use it, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation with Chris. Tonight, we've got Chris Marhefka on the show. Chris is a coach, the CEO, and facilitator of Training Camp for the Soul. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Nick. I'm excited.
Me too. Chris, so far today, what non-negotiables and unusual things have you done for your health and performance?
So non-negotiables are sleep a lot, and as much as my body needs. Hydrate is non-negotiable. Get out in nature, preferably sunshine, with my feet on the ground. Those are like non-negotiables for me every day. And the one that, what was the other term you used?
Non-negotiables or unusual things.
Unusual. There you go. So unusual, this morning I actually started a peptide protocol to heal a chronic injury that I've had for like 2 years.
Which peptide is that?
So I'm currently doing, BPC 157 and TB 500.
Oh, the stack.
Yeah. Yeah. highly recommended, by many of my, health and wellness coaches and practitioners. Great data on that. So
yeah, that's a super popular stack to bounce back from injuries faster. So Chris, a lot of us ex-athletes and athletes are very experienced with training camp. It's a couple weeks of brutal 2 days, 3 days, grueling conditions under the sweltering hot sun. But then what's training camp for the soul?
Yeah, so training camp for the soul, simply put, is the last self-development program you'll ever need. We put the finishing touches on what most people are doing in personal development and growth. And those things that we're putting the finishing touches on are what I would call subconscious patterns that are running in the background, and they're the ones that are responsible for the majority of people's life decisions. And so we support people in uprooting those things and replacing them with something that does serve them. And it's a boot camp, it's a training camp, because it's grueling, it's hard work. We're literally facing parts of our ego and our identity that are no longer serving us, and having to face, accept those things, come to terms with them, and then be willing to shift and to change them.
I remember when I first started learning and getting into self-development, that the dogma then was that your subconscious is immutable. Like, it's there and you have to figure out how to work around it. But it sounds like what you guys are doing is really getting to the core and reprogramming the subconscious.
Definitely. And that is true. What you just said is true if you're looking at it from the standpoint of the conscious mind, because the conscious mind can never win the battle against the subconscious. It's so much stronger. It takes no energy to run. It's like, when we're walking, you and I, we learned how to walk when we're 1 year old, and we don't have to think about it today. That's our subconscious working. It's doing its job. And so, what we do is we go to the deeper layers that many people aren't even aware of, again, below the conscious, and, we pull out the root of them. And the root of them is usually some sort of thing that happened in your past that caused you to act, speak, think differently than you were previous to that.
I see. And is this at all related to what's going into vogue these days called shadow work?
Yeah, it's so in vogue. And it's, in a way, shadow work is a part of our program. And, you know, I actually... I like to shift the relationship to that. A lot of people see shadow as like the dark side, right? It's like these things that are parts of ourselves that usually come with some shame or some guilt or rejection or suppression of them. And our shadows come with gifts as well. And so what we do is we shift the relationship. We shine light on those things, but we do it from a place of love, compassion, acceptance. So you're not in this constant battle with your shadow. You're accepting these parts of yourself, and then you're learning how to work with them so that they are then become your greatest gifts, honestly.
And I've noticed from personal experience that when you shine the light on the shadow, a lot of times that alone is enough to create change.
Yes. 100%. And that's really, I mean, I would like to build up what we do as some complex, like super secret expert mode thing, but we're just asking curious questions, and we're using a process that gets people layers and layers and layers deeper than usually they can't get on their own. And that's really all we're doing as facilitators, is we're guiding you down a path that maybe you haven't been before and is a little bit scary to go down. It's, yeah. I mean, when I started doing this work, there's a lot of things that were like scary to really face. And I was only able to do it because I had support from someone who was guiding me.
When I was looking through your Instagram, I noticed very quickly, you talk a lot about the masculine and feminine. Mm-hmm. And these days, because of the social uproar, the cancel culture, it seems like it's hard to embrace like healthy masculinity. How would you compare and contrast masculinity and femininity?
Great question. This is another in vogue topic. And, you know, I like to simplify things. The way that I describe it is the masculine is action. It's doing in the world. And if that action or words are harming someone, it's unhealthy. Or toxic is the in vogue word. If it's helping someone, helping yourself, helping others, helping society, the earth, it is healthy. And so we can embrace the gifts or the masculine of the masculine by just shifting our actions to things that are supportive. They're better for us. They're better for our families, our communities, and the earth that we live on.
Yeah. I recently interviewed a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, and he talks all about the yin and yang, or yang for, as we Westerners call it. But he was talking about how the yang is masculine, mm-hmm. and the yin is feminine, and how like this intricate balance creates the life that we experience. And when you get too far mm-hmm. to either side, then you start having symptoms, problems, issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's when you really look at the simplicity of the masculine, feminine, yin and yang, it's simply this like sliding spectrum that we're always falling somewhere on, both individually and also collectively. And collectively, we have been, at least in the Western world, in the US where I am and you are, we've been skewed way too far in the masculine. I mean, almost everything about our world is masculine, the world that we live in. And so that has created a lot of, like you said, symptoms and problems they're not inherent to the masculine. They're inherent of being too far in the masculine without also the balance of the feminine. Mm.
Mm-hmm. And so embracing that femininity for us males, you mentioned feeling and healing, and they seem to go together and not just the words. How does that work?
Yeah, honestly, that's like the magic sauce to what we do to an over-masculine person, whether they be in a female body or male body, is we teach people how to feel deeper. I call that our feminine side. And through that feeling, we heal a lot of the parts of ourselves that are rejected by the masculine. These like softer emotions that we were told to suppress or that weren't allowed in our upbringing, or even just connection and intimacy. And that's how we heal these things, is through feeling. And the best way, like I always define it like very simply, is like if you are in your head, you're usually in your masculine. Like if you are in your body, in your sensations, you're usually in your feminine. And they're designed to work together. But a lot of people get caught in the like overthinking, over making meaning of things. And so like if you're a more masculine oriented person, people refer to our program as emotional Navy SEAL training. it teaches you just this deep emotional resilience to life, where you can be with anything, you can be in any situation, you can be solid. And some of our more feminine clients would refer to it as feelings class. Yeah.
Can you explain to me, like, what's the benefit of tapping into your masculine or your feminine if you naturally gravitate to the opposite pole?
Beautiful question. I'll actually shift the words first before I answer this, because I think it takes away some of the cultural stigma that's put on these things. Mm-hmm. The way I talk about it is the masculine is the command, and the feminine is surrender. And mm-hmm. in our everyday life, we are constantly making choices and we are telling essentially the universe, the divine, how we want to live life. And that is the masculine. We're commanding how we want to live. The feminine, the surrender, is essentially like softening our gaze and just like relaxing for one split second so that we can see what's really happening. And when we take a step back and we look at the big picture, we can usually see at least one other option or two other options or infinite other options that we could take action on that may actually be better aligned. And so in the case of someone who's over commanding what they want out of life, their head is down on life. They've said this is the way it's going to be, and they just keep chipping towards this thing. And it usually comes with a lot of resistance. It usually comes with a lot of pushing, a lot of like hard fought effort. And a lot of people wear that as a badge of honor. And so for those people, it's a benefit. And this, you could call this meditation. You could call this just taking a rest day. You could call this anything you want, but just slowing down. And you can see that like, oh, I've been having my head down on this thing. But when I pick my head up, if I were just to shift 1 degree to the left or the right, it would actually be an easier path. It would actually be a lot smoother. It would still get me to my outcome. And so when I do that, I'm like, okay, cool. Like I've been going this way. I'm meeting a lot of resistance. I'm going to surrender. What is the universe trying to tell me right now? Okay. I'm pushing too hard. Okay. Let's make a couple pivots. And that happens in surrender. And on the flip side of that, if people are just sitting around all day on the couch, like waiting for their perfect life to happen, they're just surrendering to everything. manifesting all this abundance and all this perfect life. And they're not actually taking action on it. They're not commanding the way they want it to look. They're going to get something, but it's likely not the specific way that they want to actually live life. And so at any given point, we're acting more on one or the other. And it's not saying one's better than the other. It's just like, which one do you need at this moment? And for me, I was hard charging for basically my whole life. Hard charging, commanding, like, and I wore it as that badge of honor. I'm setting goals, I'm hitting goals. But I never stopped to think, are these actually goals that I want to be going after? Is this actually the life I want to live? And when I went through that surrender period, I realized, no, there's actually some changes that I would like to make that feel a lot more aligned and they feel more clear for me. And so once I did that, I was able to jump back into action with clarity. And that's what so many people are seeking right now, is more clarity in their life, more clarity in their career, more clarity in their relationships. And really, all it takes is a little bit of that, just a drop of surrender, just a moment of surrender. And when you get in the practice of doing that, life gets easier. You start navigating a lot smoother through life because you're seeing the signs and the clues and the opportunities, and you're able to then act on them.
Less beating your head against the wall and more looking around first and then strategically choosing where you want to go for the best outcome.
For sure. For sure. It's like if we were playing sports, we'll use like football as an analogy. If the quarterback didn't read the defense and he just went forward with whatever the plan was that was called ahead of time, like they wouldn't do very well. They'd meet a lot of resistance. They'd throw picks, they get sacked, they get whatever, but he reads the defense, and that's the surrender. He's like, okay, this is what life or the defense is throwing me. So I'm going to pivot. And then I'm going to take a different action that looks better, like a better outcome. And that's essentially what we're doing in life all the time, if we allow it.
So how do you know where you are on that continuum? If you have the balance just right, or as I'm guessing most people are who are listening to this, you know you're off a bit to one side, but you also don't want to overcompensate and go the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the question to ask yourself if you're on the surrender side is, if you're not getting what you want, like what you say you want, what you're manifesting, if you're not getting it, like asking yourself simply, what action am I not taking? Like, where am I not claiming this? Where am I not stepping into this? And usually the action gets obvious. On the masculine side, I usually track it from if I'm beating my head against the wall and if I'm meeting a ton of resistance from life. And not just the resistance of like going in and training hard. Like there's resistance of training your body, and it can be challenging in the workout. It's repetitive signs that it feels like the way I describe it is like I'm pushing a weighted sled uphill. Versus life can feel more like cruising down the hill in that same sled. And yeah. So anytime I feel like I'm meeting a ton of resistance, I have the practice of surrendering, even if it's just for like an hour to just slow down, maybe cancel a meeting, do a short meditation, or just sit in stillness or journal. Like these are all surrender practices. Like what's actually going on here? It's funny. I would say that previous to a few years ago, the world that I was in, I thought that everyone was hard charging and they were always too much in their masculine. But now that I'm more in the personal development world, I experienced, there's also a lot of people that are too far in the feminine surrender and they actually need to go and take some actions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that once you start going down this route, and since you've worked with countless people, that you often see people bashing their head against the wall around self-talk, and they tell themselves the wrong things, which is hindering their progress.
All the time. Our language is so powerful. The language that we use on ourselves and with others is creating our reality. And people are just, they don't know, is the best way to put it. All of these, going back to the subconscious, the way we speak, the way we think, the way we act, the way that we respond to situations, the way that we talk to ourselves internally, these are all pre-programmed systems that are running on autopilot. And so most people don't know until they start meeting significant resistance is when they start to have awareness that something is not right here. And that's where like a program like ours comes in, whereas we almost slow down your life to the point to where you can see it playing out like a movie, and you can start to pick out the things like, oh, I see what I did over there. Oh, I see that I'm acting this way in work and at home. And we can start to like unwind and pick apart these patterns so that it's almost like I talk about like rocket fuel is like, if someone has a growth mindset and they've done a lot of personal development work, they know what it's like to follow a plan and get success. What we do is we essentially help you cultivate the best plan for you to trust and feel confident in. And then you just go and do it. And then life shifts like that. And oftentimes when people come to us, it's after they've done a decent amount of work on themselves and they're already in the practice of going inside, at least mindset work. And so they get it. Like they get that changing small things in your life have massive repercussions over time. Mm-hmm.
I'm also very wary about the things that I tell myself, the labels I ascribe to myself. I am this. I am keto, for example. Mm-hmm. Is that really who you are? Or is that just something that you happen to be interested in and researching, which is very different? Like, that's not who I fundamentally am. Mm-hmm. And the words you tell yourself, such as I'm heartbroken,
I'm a procrastinator, I'm lazy,
the more you say it, it might not happen instantaneously, but the closer that your reality will align to that path eventually.
Yes. 100%. And this is the same methodology that we use to reprogram the subconscious, to reprogram these patterns. the first thing that we do anytime someone is using language like I am, this like really fixed identity, is we do a language reframe that is I learned to be. I learned to be this. I learned to do this. And what that gives you the opportunity is if you learned it, you can unlearn it and relearn something else. But when you say I am, that is fixed. Like in our language, that is as fixed as it gets. And so we open up this little window of like, I learned to be. And then as we start shifting it, we use the I am statements for what you want to create in your life, who you want to be. And even those, like when we're going through the process, even those are for now, right? They're usually like to overcome something that's present in your life right now. And like for me, someone who's been doing this work for many, many years, I've gone through many different evolutions where my I am statements, I then had to rework those or refine them for where I am today. Because as we grow physically, we also grow emotionally, psychologically, and everything else is growing around us as well. So it would be silly if we were the same person as we were 10 years ago. I mean, Think about that. It's a given that we grow up, right? It's a given that we age, but most people are viewing their identity, their personality, as a fixed thing. And if you hold on to that with statements like I am, it will be. And that's where you'll usually get a lot of conflict in your life, because your life will be changing around you, but you'll still be stuck in an old identity that no longer serves your current situation. And that's actually what happens with patterns that get passed down from our parents, is that like maybe something that our parents taught us served them. It was like, it was needed for that time. Like that's how they live their life. But now your life is different and that pattern may not serve you anymore. But that's how generational things get passed down. We take them as just the way to be. This is the way I am. And we're living in a different world.
Yeah. So Chris, what are some of the tools in your toolbox when someone works with you? What are the different modalities that you employ to help them through whatever it is that they're dealing with?
Yeah. So there is the, what I call the mental side. And then I call the emotional or energetic side. On the mental side, we use a few very proven frameworks around like inner family systems and inner child healing. These are all just like parts work.
Can you explain what that is?
Yeah. Yeah. So the best way to define it is we as individuals have many, many characters that make up us. And if you think about it, you're not the same person at work that you are at home with your partner, that you are with your kids, that you are on the sports field or in the gym. You're bringing out different energies. You're bringing out different characteristics of yourself. And in our work, we have many of those parts that make us up. And at any given moment, one of those parts can come online and we can think that we are that person. We can just think, this is who I am, like in this moment. But what's more accurate is like, oh, this is just a part of me. And it may or may not be the right part to be in this situation right now. And so what we do is we help people identify like all these different parts of themselves. The best way that we simplify it is we simplify it to be the ego, the mind. Or the inner critic, the inner judge is another one. And the ego is like our identity. The inner critic, the inner judge is the person who's like always telling you you're not good enough, you're not fast enough, you're not strong enough. You're the always judging everything that's happening in the world. The inner child, which in our model represents the emotions. We have the shadow. And then we have the heart. And all of these five different parts have a different voice. They have like a different tone to them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times if you're going through something, we'll have people do what's called a dinner party. It's as if all five of these parts are sitting around the table and like a family dinner, like everyone's talking louder over top of each other. Everyone wants to get a word in. And this is what's happening oftentimes inside of our psyche. And that's why it's sometimes hard to make decisions, or it's oftentimes confusing because one voice will be talking and we'll be listening to that one. And then all of a sudden another one will flip on with a different like point of view and we'll be like, wait, like, and most people aren't even aware that this is happening, but it's happening constantly all the time. And so we help people pull those things apart. And the inner child work is where we take that little voice, because it's usually not the loudest. Usually the loudest are the ego and the inner critic. We let the inner child speak. We let the emotions be expressed. And oftentimes, these are things that when they were growing up, from 0 to 7, usually is when most of development happens, there was something that was missing, a need that wasn't filled. They weren't loved. Didn't feel safe. They weren't told they were good enough or that they could do anything they wanted, like whatever it may be. Maybe they were told ones like, don't trust men. Other people will hurt you. Like we have like a list of 100 limiting beliefs, but everyone has a different flavor. And all the inner child needed was to, close the loop on that. And so what we do is we take people back and we figure out like, okay, what did that child need that they didn't get? Like what was missing? What was the gap? And then we teach them through our process, like how to close that gap for themselves. This is called reparenting. Teach them how to parent themselves. And then when that child feels whole again, they can go on and live life. It's as if we've listened to the child. They're good. They just want to go off and play again. And then ultimately what we want to get to is leading from our heart. So our heart is basically, call it the seat of the soul. I mean, it's love consciousness. And so if we're listening to all those voices, we're hearing them all, letting them all speak, and we're giving them the time that they need. And then ultimately the heart is like the chairman of the board. He's the head of the table. And he takes all the information. He's like, okay, thank you. Thank you all for contributing. Now I'm going to make the decision. We're going to move forward. And that's like the process that we teach people. Now the how we do that is a lot more on the energetic emotional side. And those tools are somatics is a huge foundation of our work.
Before we go into those, I want to add a comment that I discovered IFS and parts work in 2021. I learned about it and then I started incorporating it. And I couldn't have expected it to be such a big game changer, because all of a sudden I would feel myself getting triggered and I would trace it back. Okay, which part is getting triggered? Why is it getting triggered? And then recognizing that each part has a valid reason for being triggered, for expressing what it's expressing, that alone just like eases a lot of the tension and allows me to hear that part, feel soothed in the situation, and then respond the way I want to respond instead of reacting.
Yes. You just nailed it. All of these things are there for a reason. And when you can say like, thank you for doing your job, like you turned on because I needed you. Okay. Now when I'm actually reflecting, I'm hearing you out. Okay, good. You did your job. Good. Now I'm going to make the decision. Yeah. I love that.
Kind of like what you were saying with the reparenting. It's like once that aspect of your biology gets the attention, you shine a light on it, then all of a sudden it eases up and it can cause a cascade of effects down the line.
Yes. Yes, it really can. And so like this process, man, I don't like to make big claims, but it can change your physiology. You can heal part like chronic pain. And I don't like to make these claims, but this is what we see. Like people are holding all this stuff, this unhealed, stuck energy in their body. And when it gets released, when it gets listened to, when it gets paid attention to, and it gets reparented and given what it needs, like it's almost as if we're getting everything back into alignment, and it can things can flow again. Life can flow again. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we can even get creative with parks work. Like I have a lot of like names for all like my inner fat kid that just wants to binge and everything. Like we can come up with the names with anything. And so it's all also like we're laughing because that's another thing we do is we bring a lot of lightness and forgiveness to this process. Because if we're always like serious and we always feel like we're battling ourselves inside, it's a draining process. It's like demotivating. It's not exciting, but when you welcome it in, you laugh about these things. You laugh about the, oh, there's that thing again. There's that guy showing up. It's like, it dissolves it almost instantly. And there's not as much like attachment to it when we're so like, oh, that type of energy. It's like you're constantly in this fight. And that's why I try to reframe in the work that we do. The work is just practice. It's just like, oh, this is another thing to practice with. Cool.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be this like hard, like, oh, always beating your head against the wall with personal development. It can be easy too.
So what are some of those energetic practices? You were just saying somatics a second ago before I cut you off.
Yeah. No, these are the ones I had no idea about. I spent 10 years in personal development in like mindset and performance work. And I didn't discover these until like 3 years ago. And wow. Yeah. And I had like a deep background in like the mind, the conscious mind, and how to like manipulate it and like create these strategies to like overcome these things. But the truth was, is that I was just getting good at battling my subconscious. And when I started learning these energetic emotional practices is when I was able to start healing the things that I was battling against. So I no longer had to battle them, which makes life a lot easier.
Yeah.
So somatics, big foundation of our work. And in that simply just means we're teaching people how to track energy in the body, energy, call it sensations, call it emotions. Emotions are just energy in motion. Mm-hmm. And we just label them as like, oh, this sensation in my body is happiness. This is love. This is fear. This is anxiety. But really, all it is a sensation. And so what we teach people how to do is get into their body, slow down, and actually observe like what's happening inside of me. And then we start to make the connection between what's happening in the body and what's happening in the mind. And what the instant response is the mind immediately makes a story about what's happening in the body. It's like, oh, this is how, oh, that's the label. And this is why you start coming up with this big story. You make it mean this massive thing. And then it just snowballs from there. The mind is really good at that. Yeah. But if we continue to slow them down, we notice that process is happening. We drop them back in their body and it gets objective again. And when it's objective, it becomes, again, it becomes a light. You become unattached to it. You're like, oh, this is just tingling in my chest or warmth in my belly. Like we even use words like a 5-year-old would describe it. It's like, does it have a color? Does it have a shape? Does it have a size? Mm-hmm. And all this is, this is teaching people how to be more with their emotions so that their emotions aren't constantly running their decisions in their life. This is emotional resiliency. So something happens, I get a trigger, someone says something or I read something on social media or whatever happens, and a trigger happens in my body. Boom, sensation. Almost instantaneously, the story forms. Almost instantaneously, most people respond. So all we're doing is we're slowing down the process so that people can actually see and feel what's happening so that then they can make more conscious decisions, choices versus unconscious reactions.
I practice meditation for that exact reason, because I find that it widens the gap between stressful or triggering stimulus and my reaction, my undesirable reaction. Mm-hmm. And so it teaches you how to tune into your body and notice when subtle changes occur. And the more you do that, the better you get at it. The more you realize that there's a third or fourth or a millionth different option of way you can respond.
Yeah, it's the most empowering thing a human being can do, because what I witness, and I imagine most of us are witnessing, is that most people are operating their entire life based on avoiding a certain sensation in the body. That's it. And it's when we can learn how to navigate that inner environment, not be afraid of it, not run from it, not suppress it, not explode onto somebody else, we then get to take back control of our life. We then are empowered to choose again. And there's no greater gift to being a human than that free will choice of like choosing the life that you want to live. And if you look at the brain study statistics, is that in someone that meditates, someone that's very aware, very conscious, I'll give us a little boost here. The two of us, we have a regular practice of self-awareness. Still, someone like that, about 90% of their life is being run by their subconscious programming. Someone who is unaware is something more like 98%.
Oh.
Yeah. And so that means that the majority of us, even when we're doing all these like awareness practices, we're self-aware, we're doing meditation, you still can't outwork and beat in battle the subconscious. And so when you learn how to reprogram it and work with it, you no longer have to. It becomes who you are rather than like pretending like you're a person. That's the other thing in development that I see a lot, is it's a useful tool to like pretend like you're a new version of yourself, but there should be a time where you can actually be that person. If you're constantly for your whole life pretending, you're not actually integrating these beliefs. You're just staying aware enough to try to be this new person. And that's like what I was trying to do for over a decade in personal development. As always, I would learn a tool, and if I was conscious of it, I would choose differently. And I would keep doing that over and over and over again. And that's useful. Don't get me wrong. Like, that's very useful. And if you can do that in conjunction with just reprogramming some of these deep-seated things that are running a lot of your life, everything gets smoother. Everything gets easier. And you get to the point to where you become this version of yourself that you desire to be. And it's like you don't even recognize the old person, because it's not who you are anymore. It's you've actually changed the lines in your code, in your DNA.
Yeah. Chris, I want to talk more about some of the tips and tricks you have to actually integrate these stabilizing techniques into your lifestyle. But before we do, the way I see it, whenever you want to override your subconscious, it takes willpower. And we know that willpower is finite. Like, you only refuel your gas tank with rest, sleep, and recovery. But either way, it's limited. And each time you fight it, you burn some of that. So, and that gas tank applies to all activities throughout your day. So if I fight my subconscious all day and then we get to 6 p.m. and I know I should work out, but I'm drained from having drained my entire willpower gas tank. So it makes intuitive sense to work on fixing, maybe not fixing, that's a strong word, reprogramming your subconscious.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the most effective way to lasting change. The easiest way to lasting change. You know, I tried it the other way for so long, and it led me to, I was hacking ways to get a little bit more in my gas tank is all I was doing for 10 years. When I was doing that, like, I was just like, okay, I'm gonna get a little more in my gas tank to fight this subconscious, until I realized what was actually happening. So there is a better way.
And that's something that I'm prone to do too. I'll look around and say, okay, I know I can do this work and I am doing this work, but I want results faster. Yes. So instead of just being patient, I'm going to take these supplements and do different things to alter my neurotransmitter levels so that I can override my natural breaks. And yeah, I'll suffer the consequences, but that's a a later discussion. That's a later thing I have to put up with.
Yeah. And you know, that's how most people are viewing their lives, honestly. In many areas of our life, our health, our relationships, our enjoyment of life, where everyone's trying to hack the system. And there's a way to just change the system so you don't have to be constantly hacking it.
I got into this as a biohacker, and then I quickly realized that it's not biohacking that I'm interested in. It's bioharmonizing. I want to work with the body rather than against it, because that's a long-term viable solution.
Yes, exactly. And like, you can use those tools. Like, I still use like the tools, all the fancy tools here and there when my life is out of alignment, but it's a strategy to get myself back into alignment and then change the habits so I stay in balance and harmony. Yes. It's not a long-term solution.
Okay, so now tell me some of your secrets to actually integrating these new habits.
Yeah, you know, my most powerful one that I share every podcast, every time I can, is the breath. The breath is our, call it God-given, universe-given, whatever, whoever designed us. It is the thing that allows us to control our state. Or our nervous system, if you're more on the science side. So we can use our breath to upregulate our nervous system, i.e. get into a stress response, or we can use our breath to downregulate, get into a rest, digest, relax, recover, heal. And most people are so upregulated, they don't even know what it feels like to be at peace, to be calm, to be still. And it's like, I don't want to say it was just as a product of our culture, it's worn like a badge of honor, right? And everything is stimulating. Like we embrace like caffeine, like it's the best thing to happen to the, like, you know, I mean, we embrace the stimulation of technology and screens, and it's getting to the point to where people or humans, I should say, can't handle it anymore because it's too much overstimulation. We're so upregulated that people have lost their ability to think critically. They've lost their ability to feel. They've lost their ability to feel safe. They've lost their ability to love, because none of those things happen when we're in a survival state. And you can't create from a survival state. You can't live. You're literally surviving the moment. And that's what that system is designed for. It has a very powerful use. It gets us out of danger and it shuts off everything that's non-essential other than getting us out of danger. Yet most people are living every single second in an imaginary danger because they don't know how to downregulate their nervous system. So they never come back. They never come back to the parasympathetic, the rest system. And honestly, we're designed as parasympathetic beings. We're actually, I don't want to go too far in this direction, but we're not designed to be upregulated like a prey animal. We're a predator. We have no natural predators that are attacking us. Yet we act like we're constantly on alert. And so using the breath to slow down, and this is a constant practice. It's not just like doing one breath work session on a Saturday and then you're good for the week. I actually think it's more valuable to learn how to breathe intentionally in the moment, to slow down your breath. There's a reason why these sayings of take 10 deep breaths before you respond. It's because when we take 10 deep breaths, we slow down, we can see more clearly what's happening. Our mind relaxes a little bit. Our body gets out of this like fight or flight reaction. It can relax, and then we can choose more intentionally. And that's the same thing that I encourage people to do every single moment of every day. They find themselves triggered, upregulated. And at first, like, it can, it can seem even overwhelming because people are so far from a state of inner peace that even a moment of it can feel uncomfortable. I know for me, I couldn't sit still. I never slept well because my mind was always racing. And if I was awake, my body was also racing. I was always constantly thinking forward, thinking back, doing something, moving on to the next thing. Boom, boom, boom. What's the to-do list in my head? And I didn't actually know what stillness was. And when I was in it for the first time, I was like, oh no. Oh, what is this? Oh my God, I gotta go. It was in complete conflict to the way I'd been living my life. And so it can initially be a challenge for people to slow down. And it is the greatest gift that people can give themselves, though. It gives you everything back. Your ability to choose, your ability to feel, to respond the way that you want to. And so slowing down the breath, slowing down the breathing, it slows down the mind. It slows down your speech. It helps you feel safe in your body. It helps you feel safe with other people. And it's free. We all have it. Now there's ways to do it better than others. You know, the simplest rule of thumb is the slower you're breathing and the lower in your body you're breathing, the better. Slow and low. Yeah. Low in your belly, slow, and that'll get you a long way.
Yeah, I was just thinking there's so many different modalities out there. There's 4-7-8, there's box breathing, there's all kinds, but of course the form of breathing that's captured the most attention and is the one that I always hear about, people always ask about, is a sympathetic inducing breathing technique, Wim Hof. Fire breathing, Tummo, whatever you want to call it. And of course people gravitate towards that because it feels good. It creates the hormonal cascade in the body that makes you want that, and it gives you focus and it does the things that are associated with the sympathetic state. But also what you were saying is that humans were designed to be mostly in the parasympathetic with moments, spurts in the sympathetic, yet these days we have it completely reversed.
Yeah. And I love what the Wim Hof method has done for bringing breath work to the mainstream. Yeah. And I'm in the same ballpark. I mean, we don't need more sympathetic in our life. Most of us don't, not until we learn how to be in parasympathetic. And then it's like, we can use it as a tool to upregulate our energy, to get more energy, to feel more vibrant and alive. Like, great, like, amazing tool. And I love it. I use it. I teach it. But what I think is more valuable is just slowing it down to an uncomfortable place. Like, this is actually what I say when I get in front of people that are talking so fast. You can't hear it. They're holding their breath. You're just like, okay, let's just slow it down. And then they take 10 deep breaths. And then we just, okay, wow, that's uncomfortable. And keep going. And that'll give people so much control back of their life.
It's also a great way to de-escalate any conflict.
Yeah. There's no timeline for response. We only think that there is. It's like, oh, I'm going to take a moment. I'm going to breathe. Okay. Yeah. Another breath. And then respond.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Chris, we could talk about this and what you're doing, your focus, my focus is in interests for hours, but I want to start to wind things up. And if people are interested in connecting with you and working with you, joining Training Camp for the Soul, how do they find you on the internet?
Perfect. Thank you, man. TrainingCampForTheSoul.com, Training Camp for the Soul on Instagram. And then people can also find me personally on Instagram at Chris Marhefka, my full name.
Okay. I have one question for you before we go on to the rapid fire round.
Cool.
Are you ready?
Yep. Let's do it.
All right. Imagine that all knowledge on earth is gone. You get to save 3 books or any forms of informational content. What would you choose and why?
Ooh, this is a good question. The Ten Commandments. And I'm not religious by any means, but I think that a value system that is do no harm is vital to whatever happens with humanity after all the things are wiped out. And so some form of value system like the Ten Commandments. And that's just the one that came to me.
Or just teachers that have made a big impact on you.
That actually takes me in a different direction for sure. Buddhism, man. Again, not religious at all. I wouldn't call myself a Buddhist, but in a lot of ways, like their non-denominational teachings, I believe give a really good model for the way we can live life in a peaceful and loving place. And one of the teachers that has impacted my life a lot is Ram Dass.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good choices.
Thank you.
Okay, on to the rapid fire round.
Hell yeah.
What is one thing you are interested in and researching these days?
Crypto.
Crypto, that's a good one.
Yeah.
How about some of the popular myths in your line of work?
The mind should be the boss is not true. The mind is a incredible servant, a terrible leader, terrible boss. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let the heart lead.
Mm-hmm. Is there any particular purchase, a gear, device, technology, supplement, book, you name it, under $500 that has had a disproportional effect on your life or work?
Upgrading my water.
Ah.
I was raised in a house where you just drink out of the tap. You don't pay for water. And I don't believe in drinking out of plastic, but drinking like clean water has made a very big impact on my health. And I'm someone who's been hacking my body for over 20 years. And I never considered it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I have to know, what kind of water is that?
So I drink some raw spring water from a company called Alive Water. It's good killer. Choice.
That's the highest quality water you can get.
Yeah, that's, you know, and that's when I started healing my money stories around like scarcity. I started investing in things that I valued, and my body was on the top of that list. And I was like, for all the other things I spend money on, like I've got $100 Wi-Fi and a cell phone, like all this others, like I can go out to eat one night and it costs me like less or more than a month of like the best water that I can find.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I do the same for food too. Like I really do believe in, I'm not currently growing my own food. That's a desire of mine. I actually only eat meat in my house that I've hunted. That is a practice I've been doing for the last 2 years. And it gets me much more in touch with my food and much more intentional with it. I would like to be growing my food in the future, but in the meantime, I buy the best quality food I can.
I like that. I'm on the same page as you. What's something that your tribe does not know about you?
I'm a pilot. I'm a recreational pilot. Yeah. I don't ever talk about it, but I love that part of me. I feel, it was like an accomplishment that I always wanted to be one when I was a kid, not as a job, but I always wanted to do it and I did it and I can now fly a plane. Like I don't talk about that much.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Even if you don't do it regularly, it's still a cool skill to have.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Chris, any final takeaways? How would you like to bring this episode home tonight?
Yeah. If you take nothing else from the words that I say, the information that we talked about, what I always love is give people the invitation to slow down and breathe and choose. And I've been saying that for over a decade, but it feels more important now than ever before when there's so many forces pressuring like every aspect of our lives. And I'm not just talking about current events. It's just so much. And so know that you are a sovereign being. You can choose any life that you desire to live, but it takes slowing down and breathing and facing some of these parts of yourself that may be difficult to look at. And it's possible, and it's actually easier than most of us think that it is.
Wow. It's a very high ROI activity.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, thank you for joining us tonight. And it has been a pleasure getting to know you, your work, and I'm hoping to join you at one of your boot camps at some point.
Would love to have you, brother.
I'm Nick Urban here with Chris Marhefka, signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week and be an outlier.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.